You're listening to Spiritual Living for the 21st Century, the podcast from Unity San Francisco that explores modern spiritual teachings and provides insight into how to apply them in your life. This is Reverend Ken Daigle. Today's talk was recorded live at Unity San Francisco. Enjoy.
When I was younger, I saw a show on Broadway called Signs for the Search of Intelligence Life in the Universe. It was written by Jane Wagner and performed by Lily Tomlin. And it was an amazing show. This absolutely phenomenal piece of theater. And I had to go back and see it a second time. And in the play, one-woman show, Lily Tomlin on stage, captivating the Broadway house. She would pantomime all through the show, picking up a needle of an old-fashioned phonograph and putting it down. And as she did, the sound would go on and the music that was supposed to happen would play. And second time I see the show, she goes to the certain part in the play. She picks up the needle, puts it down, and the wrong song comes on. And she stops dead and sound goes off, and she does it again. She puts the needle down, and the wrong song comes on again. And she backs up, and she looks at the sound booth, and she says, "I'm going to stand here, and you tell me when it's okay to go forward." And the whole audience, packed Broadway house, goes silent. Everybody's watching. She gets a nod. She goes forward. She picks up the needle. She puts it down. And the right song, the song comes on, and she goes on with the play, and the room explodes. The curtain call that day, everybody was leaning forward, and everyone was with her at every moment because they knew it was live and precarious, that weren't watching something that was happening broke. The ovation at the end of the show was 10 times the first time I saw it, because there was a mistake in it, and we all knew how precious each moment is and how everyone's performing their best. And it's our life lesson. It is our lesson for right now that everyone is trying their best, even when it goes all wrong, especially when it goes wrong. That we are human beings having this experience, and that we should be cheering for each other, like that theater exploding for Callie when it finally all comes together. Because that's all of us. That's each and every one of us just trying to get through life. My talk today is embrace your inner Pollyanna. And, you know, Pollyanna in our society has become a pejorative. Oh, you're so Pollyanna, right? It's like, it's not meant as a compliment, but Pollyanna was the most popular story of its time. When it was written in the early 1900s, there were 14 Pollyanna books written. It was the Harry Potter of its day. There were several movies made. It was sequelized. It was everywhere. There was Milton Bradley games based on the book Pollyanna. And it was called the Glad Game. It was called the Glad Game because the story of Pollyanna is anything but naive. Pollyanna was an 11-year-old orphan who had lost her mother and father. Her father was a minister. I wonder why I like the book. But he dies and leaves Pollyanna. She has to go and live with her aunt because she has no other family. And she does cry. She knows exactly what is going on. She has the hard feelings, but her father had taught her this game that when things arrived, they were missionary barrels, as she talks about, that people would give donations to the missionaries who are out working in helping people. And whatever came in the barrel is what they had. And they would hope for, she'd ask for certain things, and the barrel would come, and she'd ask for a doll for her birthday. And the barrel came, and they didn't have a doll, and it had a pair of crutches, children's crutches. So the 11-year-old and her father sit there and go, "So what if we turn this into a game? How can we be happy about what we have?" rather than sad for what we don't have. And they started playing the game every day of their lives. So whatever happened, Pollyanna would play the glad game. And when she moves to her aunt's house, she goes through this little Vermont town teaching all these people how to play the glad game. And little by little, she changes all of them. She's not naive. She cries herself to sleep some nights. She's not without intelligence. She has to search for a way to get through a life that would have most of us curled up in bed with the covers over our head. But she finds a way not only to thrive, but to survive in those moments. And it is an inspiring book. I recommend it. You can get it on Kindle. You can get it on Audible. I've been listening to it all week on Audible. And it is really funny. And it is really rich. And it is how we change things. I want to talk about this metaphor. Right? You always hear this. Is this glass half full or is it half empty? Right? It's the perennial question. And what I like to say about it is the glass is 100% full, folks. It's half filled with water and it's half filled with air. They're both the things we need to survive. We couldn't survive without either of them. And the idea that there is something missing is the problem. The idea that there is something lacking in this is the whole issue of how we're taught. You know, I don't come to this optimism naturally. Or maybe I do. Let me take that back. I come to the optimism naturally, but I also had it beaten out of me and carefully taught not to be. When I was in show business, when I was in New York trying to be a professional actor, when I was seeing that show, I would be going on auditions all the time. And I was always sizing up the competition and I was sizing up the directors and the choreographers, the people who were doing the casting directors, and all of that struggle and all of my competition and comparing and despairing and struggling. But I did all the work and I had found new thought. I had found affirmations and I was doing the work. One day, on my birthday, same exact time as this, God, a long time ago. I'll tell you how many years ago this was. But I go to a callback at a Broadway theater for a role that I really wanted, a job I really wanted. And I went into the callback and the only thing I did different was I sent love to the casting director, to the musical director, to the choreographer, to the assistants, and to everyone who was behind the table, I assumed judging me. I gave them appreciation, not with words. I said the words they wanted me to say. I did the dance steps they wanted me to do. But in my heart, in my eyes, in my consciousness, I shifted to seeing them as working for me. I see them happy. I see them getting the cast they needed and their show being a success. And on the stage that day, on my birthday, they said, "Congratulations. You've been hired. You're going to Broadway." And that shift from judging, criticizing, worrying, comparing, and despairing to loving is monumental. And it's what changes each and every one of us every day. What we focus on, we create. There's a sign out there in one of our windows that someone said, "Thoughts are things." And that is a great catchy phrase, but it's not that they're things. That thoughts create is the energy, because it creates in you and it creates a possibility. Focus. Thoughts shape reality. They do it emotionally. They do it rationally, relationally, rationally, and biologically. And I write in my book, true happiness isn't determined by the external events of our lives, but the understanding and attitudes we bring to those events. And this happens to us. It happened to me in my life
we are culturally conditioned to shift things, right? The world we live in teaches us that skepticism is healthy. You should make sure you're not getting ripped off. You should be sure that you're getting a fair shake. You should be very, very careful with what you put on the internet. You should be careful about who you speak to. You should look sideways as you're walking down the street because you never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen to you. And that jadedness becomes part of our armor that we think we keeps us safe. But what's really happening is that it's not clarity. It's not protection. This strategy to stay safe, to stay safe, is building a wall around us. It's making us bitter. It's making us less trusting. And it's closing us off. And what we're protecting against sometimes is very funny, right? What we're really protecting against is being disappointed. Well, great. Let's lower all the standards so we'll never get disappointed. Let's not try for that job. Let's not try for that relationship. Let's not try for that intimacy because we may be betrayed. We may not get that job. We may not get that relationship. We may not get that house. So we better not try at all. It's just safer to stay small and to play safe. And then often we are worried about looking foolish. Well, I let go of that a long time ago. I want to make you laugh. I want to look foolish. Alan Klein, right, with his rubber noses on his face, has no problem looking foolish, right? Because the clown nose makes us all stop. The mistake makes us all go, whoo, let's lean in. Let's play. Let's play. Just like we bless the kids. They want to go downstairs and play. They want to do things that are creative. And we don't take those risks. We're taught, carefully taught, not to take them. But really, those walls that we build also block our joy. They block our connection with each other. They block our creativity. So we end up feeling safe, but desperately unhappy. We end up feeling, I've got this, but we don't feel like we belong to anyone else or any other organization or group of people. And no one, we feel like no one will notice if we don't show up. Or no, it's our birthday. And that leaps back to cultural conditioning. So I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to stay small. I'm going to stay away. I'm going to stay hidden. And it is this never-ending circle, this circle of pain that we keep just going round and round. And we have to interject it and stop it. You know why? Because neuroscience now proves to us, and science proves to us, that optimism and positive thinking actually change us physically. They change who we are. Positive thoughts increase serotonin, create calmness, focus, and well-being in your life. And they also reduce cortisol, the stress hormone, and helps us regulate our bodies just by using positive thoughts. You don't need to take a pill for that. You need to change the way you think. All right, take the pill and change the way you think. All right? It's that you can do both together. You can be holistic in your treatment of yourself and know that your mind and your thinking is the most powerful medicine you can take. Optimism also strengthens our immune system. Positive people are shown to have a higher functioning immune system. They get less colds. They call out sick less. They do all these things. And research shows that positive emotions can actually increase antibody response. Did you know that? That positive emotions can improve antibody response in our bodies. So why shouldn't we want to do this? Why shouldn't we want to take on a positive attitude? Because you don't want to be Pollyanna.
right? Ooh, people will think I'm naive. People will think I don't see what's happening. That doesn't mean you don't acknowledge the pain. In the book, Pollyanna acknowledges the struggle people are in, but you still look for the good. You play the glad game in the middle of it. And here's one of the most important ones for me, because I have this goal. I have a personal goal. And one of my research shows that if you share a goal with people that keep you committed to it, that you actually are 33% more likely to be successful in your goal. So my goal is to live to 100.
All right.
All right. So my birthday's coming up. I won't tell you how many I have, but I'm going to be 67. So I have 33 more years on top of that, right? So I want to live to 100, right? So I want to share that with you, and you can call me accountable. What is on that? Optimists live longer. So how about this? I don't want to. I'm going to live to 100. Yes. I'm going to live to 100. And I'm going to be vibrant and healthy in that living. Positive attitudes are linked to lower blood pressure and reduced heart disease and heart risk. By changing your attitude, you improve your metabolic health. It's just the way it is. Positivity isn't a mindset. It's longevity. Right? It's how you make it to those milestones of your life. True happiness isn't determined by the external events, but by the understanding and attitude we bring to those events. I have had death, sadness, lack, loss, pain, struggle in my life. And yet, I have a beautiful, whole, magnificent, loving life and family. That's what I want to focus on. That's what I want to shift. And just like Pollyanna, I'm not naive. Pollyanna wasn't naive. She was regulating her nervous system before neuroscience was even a thing, right? But it was known. It was known that when we regulate our emotions and shift from, oh, poor me, poor me, poor me, to, huh, what good is coming out of this? Actively seeking what could be happening. We get to be different. So I invite us to take back the word Pollyanna. I invite us to shift the understanding that people who are optimists are not naive. They are actually smarter than the rest of us. And to give up, right? Yeah. To give up this jaded coolness, right? This sophisticated nonchalance, and be so happy for people's success. So happy for the little things in life that make things better. So happy for people failing because they're trying, for mistakes because they show a great effort. That's the world I want to build. That's the community I want to live into. And that's the life that I am inspiring myself by giving this talk, to let go of my cynicism, to let go of my worry. There's scripture, you know, that Jesus is quoted as saying, anxiety will not add a day to your life. So this is an ancient philosophy proven by neuroscience today, that letting go of worry and stepping into life is what we should be doing. In reclaiming Pollyanna, I'll leave you with this. Perhaps we should call her wise, not foolish. Perhaps we should be called foolish for thinking that cynicism and jadedness is something we should aspire to.
Thanks for listening to Spiritual Living for the 21st Century. I'm Reverend Ken Daigle. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Unity San Francisco, and learn more about us at unitysf.com. Spiritual Living for the 21st Century is a production of Unity San Francisco.